The Pat Kenny Show
with Mater Private Network
on News Talk.
We talk about many books on this program, but there's one from the last couple of years that I constantly recommend to book clubs or indeed to my friends. It was called Hamnet, not Hamlet, but Hamnet, and it did indeed involve the life of the Bard of Avon. Well, I'm delighted to be joined now by the author of Hamnet, Maggie O'Farrell, who's just had her latest book published by Tinder Press. It's called The Marriage Portrait. And Maggie, good morning and welcome.
Good morning to you. How are you doing?
I'm doing very well. This is another wonderful book, which I will not hesitate to recommend. It concerns the life, the fictional life of a factual person, Lucrezia, the daughter of Cosimo de' Medici of Florence.
That's right, yeah. And not much is known about Lucrezia, unfortunately. We know when she was born, and she was the fifth child of Cosimo and his wife, Eleonora. And we know when she died. She married at the age of 15 and went to live with her husband, Alfonso, Duke of Ferrara, and she was dead a year later, and she may or may not have been poisoned by him. It's uncertain.
And the idea of spousal murder would not have been unknown in the ruling classes?
Unfortunately not, no. Lucrezia's sister, Isabella, her older sister, was killed by her husband at the age of 35, and their youngest brother, Pietro, murdered his wife, strangling her with a dog lead. So, yes, as you say, I'm not sure I would quite term it as a hobby, but it was certainly a way to perhaps rid yourself of a wife who wasn't exactly what you wanted.
Because we must remember this was at a time when Rome ruled and there was no divorce. So if they wanted to rid themselves of a troublesome or infertile wife, murder was the simple way.
That's right, because these people were the lawmakers, so they could basically do what they liked. So they were above the law, and none of the men who killed their wives were ever held to account. It was just something that happened, and you just got on with it, and you found the next wife.
Now, what drew you to this young girl, 13 when she was betrothed, 15 when she married, a man somewhat older than her, the Duke of, well, soon to be Duke of Ferrara at the time of the betrothal, and actual Duke at the time of her wedding. How did you find this young girl?
Well, actually, I came to it through the poem by Robert Browning, My Last Duchess, which is probably his most famous poem, and I've loved it for years, and I was just rereading it. It was actually the spring of 2020, and I was just wondering to myself one day whether it was based on real events, because some of his poems are, and I looked it up, and within a couple of minutes, I was looking at this downloading portrait, this oil portrait of this very young girl, and her face looked very apprehensive and very nervous. She looked as if she had a story to tell, and I knew as soon as I saw it that I'd found my next book, that I wanted to imagine the story she might tell us if she were able.
Now, Hamnet was your first foray into historical fiction. Were you tempted to come back to the contemporary, but ambushed by Lucrezia?
Well, in a strange way, you know, I mean, I don't need to explain what happened in 2020 here, but in a way, the contemporary world in that year was so odd and, you know, so strange that in a way I was glad that I wasn't writing a book about contemporary world, because none of us really knew what the world was going to be like when we emerged from that very, very strange and unsettling pandemic. But no, certainly I really love, you know, it was not so bad when we were all in lockdown doing a bit of armchair travel every day to Renaissance Florence and Renaissance Ferrara. There are definitely worse places to sort of imaginatively root yourself.
Now, a little is known, not so much about Lucrezia because she was so young when she died, but certainly about her family. And it would appear from your writing, but also from history, that her father was, for his time, a very open-minded person about the way girls should be educated.
Yeah, he was. I mean, obviously, Cosimo was not averse to selling his daughters off into a politically advantageous marriage for him. That shouldn't be said first. But at the same time, he absolutely adored his wife, Eleonora, even though their marriage was partly arranged. He completely was head over heels in love with her and was faithful to her, which was even more unusual, I think, in those days. And he used to cede his rule to her when he was absent from Florence, which really set the cat among the pigeons in the Florentine court. But I think most crucially, he educated Lucrezia and her sisters alongside his boys. So Lucrezia and her sisters had the absolute best education that money could buy. They were highly educated, highly refined young women.
Now, you wrote the narrative, but it's so full of contemporary detail. I mean, you had me flying to Google to check out things like there's just a moment, which it doesn't in any way spoil the narrative, of a bird fluttering against the glass to try to get out. And I'm wondering, did all houses and palaces have glass at that time?
And, well, if you were a very extremely wealthy noble, then yes, you did. I'm not sure how many people in Florence and Ferrara did, but certainly the Medici's and the D'Estes did. Just to give you some example, Lucrezia's dowry was the equivalent of £50 million. So that's these are just the kind of sums that were passing between these courts.
So, I mean, this was a marriage made for political advantage, the idea of allying the courts of Florence and Ferrara, and well worth the money, it would have been thought, by the Duke of Florence.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, yeah. Basically, the Medici's, I think, at that time, were slightly looked down upon as a little bit nouveau riche, because they had been, a couple of generations before, merchants of all things. So shocking. But the D'Estes, by contrast, in Ferrara, they were an ancient sort of aristocratic noble family that went right the way back to the Roman Empire. So I think probably the D'Estes slightly thought the Medici's were a little bit arrivist, I suppose I should say. So I think Cosimo, in marrying off his daughter to the D'Estes, wanted a bit of aristocratic cachet, and I suspect Alfonso wasn't averse to that very large check.
Now, you've said that historical fiction is writing about any time that is beyond living memory. I suppose if you're writing about the 19th century, there would still be enough stuff knocking around that you could fact check. But when you're writing about this period, a medieval period, Renaissance period, there will be people who will be trying to fact check you. Was it difficult to make sure the detail, whether it's the detail of killing or the detail of decor, to get it right?
Well, you know, I mean, Renaissance Florence and Ferrara, there's so much written about the Italian Renaissance and so much visual imagery. But actually, so obviously a lot of my research was based in books and was library-based and text-based. But actually what I also found is that people, academics particularly, experts in history or costume or money or art, were incredibly generous. You know, all I had to do was, send an email to somebody, I found and say, could you help me out with this? How much was a gold scudi worth in today's money? And I was amazed at people's generosity and keenness to talk about it. You know, there were two academics in particular who were so generous with their knowledge. And there's one here in Edinburgh, at the University of Edinburgh, where I live, and we had sort of long walks around the park during lockdown, and she would tell me all about female artists in Renaissance Italy. So I was hugely helped by the expertise of others.
It's hard to talk too much about the book, which I finished over the weekend, having had it on holiday with me. I didn't want to finish it because I thought it was so enthralling. But it's hard to talk about it without giving away spoilers.
It's true. I particularly the ending. I always knew that I wanted the ending, which I won't divulge. But I wasn't sure I could pull it off. So I was quite anxious when I handed it in to my editor. I thought she might come back to me and say, what on earth are you doing here? But she didn't, luckily. She liked it. So there it stands. But certainly, I wanted the book to read a little bit like a thriller. So I did read a lot of other thrillers while I was writing it to get the kind of twists of the reader's expectations and to continually pull the rug out from under their feet in a way. I read a lot of Daphne du Maurier. And I also went back and read Wilkie Collins' The Woman in White to understand how the sort of mechanisms or the physics of those types of plots.
It's interesting today, Maggie. You're a Derry-born woman, spent much of your life in Britain, but identify very much as Irish. But on this day, when Queen Elizabeth II is being buried, there's a kind of a continuity there back to royal families of Italy, and we still have royal families today.
I know, it's a strange one, isn't it? I mean, not all over the world, but certainly here we do. Yeah, my husband has got the TV on, actually, and we've just been watching all these different heads of state file into the cathedral, and it's quite a sight to see.
Quite a sight to see. Well, the new book is called The Marriage Portrait. It's published by Tinder Press, and its author, Maggie O'Farrell. Thank you, Maggie, very much for joining us on the programme.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Matter Private Network.
Weekdays at 9 a.m. on News Talk.